You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. My next guest grew up in Senegal, but these days she calls Detroit her home. She brings her experiences as an African immigrant, Black Muslim woman to work in social justice and human rights in Metro Detroit. Fatou Sadi Sarr is the founder and executive director of ABISA, African Bureau for Immigration and Social Affairs. She also leads the Springboard to Excellence Youth Leadership Program, working with young women in eighth grade. Sadi, welcome to Stateside. So good to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Cynthia. I'm happy to be here.
Tell me a little about your immigration experience. Every immigrant has to go through adjustments and has to go through changes. My own husband is an immigrant, and he came from Ireland and went through a lot of changes when he came here 42 years ago. And I'm sure you were faced with having to make adjustments. What were some of the big adjustments as you came to Michigan?
Oh, my God. I mean, food was a biggie when I came to Michigan, and I was like, what is that? Yogurt did not taste the same. That was my first argument. Then after, it's like, you know, lifestyle, things that we think are universal and normal. You find yourself wrestling with, really, I thought everybody do this this way. No, they don't. What do you mean? And those questions, you know, they come in and out, and you just have to transition with them. Coming here, having a degree, and finding out that your degree isn't valued at the same level, or your experience doesn't, you know, translate the same. Now you were an administrator, now you're being proposed to be a clerk, and you're looking like, really, did I go to school for this? So those are things that you learn to accommodate yourself with.
How did you feel you were accepted when you came here in 2003?
Depending on the community.
How so?
Because at school, going to school, having to take classes, having to retake a degree, that doesn't say you are welcome. That says, well, your degree is not good enough, so therefore you have to redo this our way. So that doesn't make you feel welcoming. Going to African dance class, meeting with people who are in love with the culture you come from and that, you know, embrace you and take care of you, says, oh, yeah, you're home. So it's always depend of where you are and what the situation is. So it was in and out for me. Some of it was like, yeah, I'm good. Some of it was like, oh, okay, I have to stand my ground.
And I'm interested in what are the dynamics, at least that you've experienced, between African Americans and immigrants from African countries like you who have this experience in Africa and now living in America?
For me personally, my experience was great. Because I came into Detroit and I fell into an African-American community that is actually pretty much ingrained and in touch with their African roots. I was offered my first position as an African dance teacher in the African Senate School. So what I have to offer, who I was, my culture and all of that, was already valued. Mm-hmm. So I just added that into the pod. And, you know, it allowed me to quickly see the similarities, that this is my long-lost brother, that even though slavery happened and all of this happened, sometimes you look at people, you look at their face, and you can swear, you know, on which ethnic group they are. You look at them and you be like, I don't know, but I can tell you Fulani, I can tell you this. Or to go to a friend's house and see them, they do things that you're like, this action right here, my grandma used to do this. And they get it from their grandma. And you're trying to look at what actually like was preserved after so many years. I have so many aha moments with things like that. So that was my introduction into the African American community, and that's how I was integrated. That's what made Detroit home for me.
And then you started ABISA, the African Bureau for Immigration and Social Affairs. Why was this important to you?
Personally, I was seeing how there was roadblocks to my integration and me actually committing to this idea of let me build a better life. And I cannot do it easily because I'm an immigrant.
And you want to help other immigrants,
yes,
as they come
so,
in.
So, yeah, finding out that the question I have, I didn't have no place to go, mm-hmm, where somebody can tell me, go this way, don't do this, don't do that. This is going to be longer, this is going to be shorter, this is going to cost you more money. Don't take this student loan. Don't take the difference between a subsidized and unsubsidized student loan. What does it really mean? What effect does it have? Here I am like 10 years later when I graduated with my master's, I owe $97,000 in student loan. 6 months later, you're receiving a bill saying, hey, you have to start paying $900 to $1,000 a month to pay a student loan. And you're like, hey, hold on. Mm-hmm. I didn't find a job yet. In the idea of this being done, there are certain stuff that I did not know. If I had known what I know now, maybe I would not have racked up $97,000 in student loan. So if I can avoid anybody else coming here not understanding how this works to make the right choice, why not?
So you interact with immigrants as they come in to kind of show them the ropes.
Show them the ropes, or, you know, the one who have been here for a long time and have been held back because they didn't know where to go. So trying to figure out what can we do to better integrate if the society that is our host society is not really putting stuff on place to really welcome us as we should.
And the Springboard to Excellence Youth Program. So you're working with 8th grade girls.
Yes.
Why 8th grade girls? Why did you pick that age?
Because my daughter is in 8th grade.
There's a good reason.
That's a good reason.
But they're right on the bubble, aren't they?
They are right on the bubble. And then it's like I was so frustrated to talking to somebody who graduated high school and now is stuck. Somebody who could not go to college because they didn't file the FAFSA. Somebody who did not complete their community hours because they did not know where to go, so or the parents were not comfortable letting them do volunteer work. So all these other little things that make your paper look good, you can apply to the best schools and stuff like that. You failed the ACT. You didn't have a good grade for the ACT. How can you do? I cannot spend my time playing catch up. This is very disheartening. I can give you last-minute advices, but I wish I had got you before. Then when that I wish came, but my daughter is growing, when we hit 8th grade and all this craziness start happening, I'm like, no. We have to start way earlier, before they hit high school.
Yeah.
So 8th grade is that threshold where they're coming out of middle school, they're going to, you know, high school, and then after that is graduation. So you're like, okay, if at 8th grade she already understands that she need 204, she need 300-something, this is the number she need for ACT, for SAT. If she can get her 200 hours of community work way before and knock it down, if she could do all this leadership and work on the fact that she is not that shy, but she can speak for herself, she can do all this other extra stuff.
Yeah.
What does it look like when she apply for college?
So you want to get them launched onto that path.
And in our Springboard to Excellence, we also talk a lot about, you know, the sense of self. Because for the immigrant children who are born first or second generation, you always have this fight back and forth of who they are, who they belong to. Are they American? Are they African American? Are they Africans? Who are they? They were born here, but they have an accent. They speak like their mom. They have a funny name. So how do they relate to the society which is theirs, but where all these triggers sometimes are telling them they don't belong? So all of that, we're trying to work with that, helping them get their sense of themselves, helping them be more educated about the society that they are. Because like I told my daughter, she travels every day. Because when she's at home, she's in Senegal. Mm. As soon as she crossed the door, she's in America. But this is the everyday back and forth. Now, that's her experience. Me, I'm always living in Senegal time. Mm. I'm an immigrant. I came here. I understand that.
But she has a foot in both worlds.
Yeah, she has feet in both worlds. So then trying to help them manage that where they can actually own it and do the best they can do with that. And what does it really mean? If I have a niece whose parents didn't understand why it was important to be civically engaged, having her understand why it is important to do that for herself, and what is that going to look like? Because it's, their life is going to be different than ours. They are not really immigrant. They are children of immigrant. But they are perceived as being immigrant and treated like that.
Fatou Sadie Sarr, who is the founder and the executive director of the African Bureau for Immigration and Social Affairs, a social activist in the Detroit area. We want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us on Stateside.
Thank you for having me.